Hi, it's great to have your company. You're listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. My name's Simon Smart. In recent years, I've come across an amazing story of an Aboriginal elder, William Cooper, who lived between 1860 and 1941. Now, the fascinating thing about him is if you were to visit Jerusalem today, you could, if you knew where to look, find a memorial and a garden in honour of William Cooper. If you visited Yad Vashem, the Holocaust Museum there, you could also learn that there's a professorial chair into the study of resistance during the Holocaust that's named after William Cooper. Well, how did that happen, you may ask? Who was William Cooper? How did he come to be so honoured in Israel? And what made this extraordinary man tick? Well, to learn more about this story, I'm joined by Matt Andrews, who first told me about William Cooper. He and I have a shared interest in this story. Good to have you in, Matt.
Yeah, thanks. Good to be here.
Now, let's trace the link here, because I want to talk about Crystal Night, November 9th and 10th of 1938, where Jewish businesses and homes, synagogues were attacked, smashed up, many people killed. It was a terrible event, and of course, this is before the war. And about a month later in Melbourne, Australia, there was a protest against this action that was launched, and this is where William Cooper comes into it. What did Cooper do, Matt?
Cooper, quite improbably, and all of it's improbable so far as you've told it, led a delegation. Now, he'd done that before, of the Australian Aborigines League. That had been formed in maybe 1934. It's not quite clear where it started. Certainly, we have records from 1935 on. And they had made representations to Prime Minister Joseph Lyons, actually here in Sydney. But they had made representations to the Premier of Victoria, to the Minister for the Interior, who was Jock McEwen, and many, many others. On this day, in December 1938, they went on a march. I'm thinking it was about 20 people. Certainly we know about 12 of them who were there from Ballarat Road in Footscray all the way to 415 Collins Street. Now, I've done that march. It's a long one. It took me a couple of hours. William Cooper, at this point, he's 77. Man. Yeah. Long march to make protest against a government agency for their policies.
But so they go to the German consul general.
It's the Reichskonsulate to have a meeting with Dr. Dreschler. So the absurdities of this are extraordinary. No one else seems to have been doing anything like this at that time. And as you say, Yad Vashem, which is the preeminent Holocaust research centre in the world, says it's the only protest of its kind anywhere, except this was led by Aboriginal people. It wasn't English people in London, wasn't, French Jews in Paris, it wasn't American Jews in New York. It was Aboriginal Australians in Melbourne who weren't even citizens of their own country.
Well, let's dig into this a bit because it's an incredible story. When you first told me about it, it was the sort of thing you thought, how do I not know about this? It's amazing. But what was it, do you think, about William Cooper that gave him such simple, clear-sightedness when it came to this action? And why was it that he had a mind to not just notice this, but to do something about it?
Okay, other people have tried to answer this question, and it's an open question, because we have no record of him talking about what he was trying to achieve on that day. We know that he certainly was a very moral person, so we've heard other people say that there's something peculiar about Indigenous people, that they have just a remarkable ethical clarity. I think it's something about William Cooper, where he came from. He's a Bangarang man. He speaks a language called Yorta Yorta, and the formation of that identity in the contact period was very much unlike any other. And it's got to do with their mission experience.
Okay, well, let's talk about that. So what was it about Cooper's early life that shaped and, in a sense, equipped him for this protest that he would make as an old man against the plight, he says, of these Jewish people that he obviously felt an affinity with?
The answer, Simon, oddly enough, is a song. It's a song called Burrifera. You may know it because it features in an independent film called The Sapphires. And it's a film of some Aboriginal women from Kamaragunja who are great singers and end up touring Vietnam.
This was a very successful film in recent years.
Yeah, it was massive success, and it's got lots of great songs beside. But there's one language song, Burrifera. Where does that come from? That song was incredibly taught to this community in August 1886 by some emancipated slaves from the United States. They were called the Fisk University Singers, or the Fisk Singers. The song that they sang was a song called Turn Back Pharaoh's Army. Now, the way that the Yorta Yorta language speakers sing it is Womriga Moses Yin Yin Wala Wala Yepuni Yepuch Narabura Fera Yumana Yala. But in English, it's not actually quite the same. The Yorta Yorta speakers dialed it up. In English, it is Pharaoh's army came after them, but God drowned Pharaoh's army. Hallelujah. So what you've got here is a very special song. And it comes out of the way that Aboriginal people were given the gospel, which was with a heavy emphasis on the Exodus story. The Exodus story is about God loving you, even though you are downtrodden, God intending to rescue you, even though you are enslaved, and many Yorta Yorta speaking people, Bangarang people around that district, in fact, had been slaves. And God is going to give you and return you to your land of milk and honey. And the thing that I'm going to ask you to do, Moses, in the Exodus story, is to go and confront Pharaoh. Now, Pharaoh's the most powerful person in the world at this time. He's got armies at his command. Now, in the 1930s, who was like that? Who was a pharaoh? Who was an evil dictator? Who had armies at his command? Who terrorized minority groups? And who was intimidating the Jews?
Well, yeah, well, we know the answer to that question. And so here was a man who'd been brought up in that kind of atmosphere of the Exodus story, the freedom of the slaves, opposing oppression, those sorts of things. This is your idea, is that this has heavily influenced the world in which William Cooper emerged.
William Cooper was very particular and absolutely fearless in his speaking truth to power in the modern parlance. He lived without electricity in his home, without gas in his home. He didn't take the train when he lived in, or the tram in Melbourne, because he spent all his money on stamps and ink and letters. So, which we're very grateful for today, because if you go to collections like the Norman Collection in the State Library of South Australia, you can read all of William Cooper's letters, and the best collection is one called Thinking Black by Bain Attwood.
What sort of reaction did William Cooper get to the protest?
Well, he was reported the very next day. I think it's in the Argus. You can look it up. There's a short article that the delegation of the Australian Aborigines League went to the Reichsconsulate, and they were refused entry. In one sense, you'd have to think that several of their members at the time would have thought it a complete failure. But as many Christians know, you don't know the consequences of what you're doing. You're simply asked to, you know, speak what you know you're meant to be speaking at that time. What we do know is this. Earlier in the year, in 1938, Australia sent a delegation to the Evian Conference. The Evian Conference had been convened mostly by the British, I think, on the shoreline of Lake Geneva to work out what we were going to do, what was the world going to do, especially Western powers going to do with refugees, that being the Jews of Europe who were pouring out of Austria and Germany. The delegation that Australia sent made an official statement afterwards, which was in its appalling language, but the language was, Australia does not have a racialism problem and we don't intend to import one. So it's a horrible thing to say, but that was the position of Australia. That was zero intake of Jews. Now, on the Thursday following the Tuesday of the march, the Minister for the Interior, Jock McEwen, made a press announcement, which is reported in The Age the next day. And the announcement was Australia would be taking in 15,000 Jews. Somebody changed their mind.
Who was that?
Well, we don't know who changed their mind. It was Joseph Lyons was still in the seat there. And we don't know if it was William Cooper's protest that made the difference. We do know that it was reported. We do know that it caused ripples. And we do know that Australia changed its mind. And I tell you this, Australia is famous today because we, as a per capita, took in more Jews as refugees from Europe than any other country in the world.
Wow. Now, this moment of the protest against Kristallnacht was reenacted. It mightn't have had a massive impact in 1938 in one sense, but it was reenacted in 2012. Got a bit more of an official response this time, right?
It did, and it's such a lovely conclusion and resolution of history that doesn't happen so often. But Uncle Boydie, who is one of only two surviving grandchildren of William Cooper, was able to deliver the letter. It was a remarkable day. And yes, there really were hundreds and hundreds of people from around the world. And it created its own storm of interest. There was a number of Jewish tourists from Israel who became part of the walk, which was magnificent. And it was a lovely moment of resolution of unfinished business because Uncle Boydie, who's one of only two grandchildren of William Cooper, who actually lived with his grandfather there on Ballarat Road in Footscray, was able to hand that letter of protest to the current General Consul of Germany. His name is Michael Pierce, and he received that letter, and it has now gone through the correct diplomatic channels right up to the top of the German government. And I understand that they will be, in fact, receiving Uncle Boydie at the time in the very near future to make a formal apology to him.
That's a fabulous story, Matt. I wonder if you could say something about Cooper's Christian faith that was part of, was caught up in his political activism.
I don't think you can explain the way that William Cooper did his political activities except the fact that he was a Christian and a particularly word-oriented Christian. I know that Uncle Boydie has told me that, you know, they were drilled on reading the Bible old style every night, and that really fed his imagination so that he had absolute confidence that the resurrection and the new heavens and the new earth would bring restoration. He also believed, this is very strange to hear as a white fella, he also believed that he was going to be judged for what he did or didn't do because he had European ancestry as well. That's where the name Cooper comes from. So he was responsible for restoring justice amongst Aboriginal people.
Well, Matt, it's such an inspiring, intriguing story. I want to look at this more on Life and Faith, so we're going to get you in again. And next time, we're going to talk to an Indigenous person whose life has been deeply affected by William Cooper, but also by Daniel Matthews, who started the Maloga Mission. That mission represented a really interesting period of Aboriginal people connecting with white people in a really positive way. And the person we're going to hear from will talk about the way that legacy still lives on today among his people. It's a great story. Look forward to that on Life and Faith in coming weeks.